Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Digitally Uploaded podcast. I'm Matt Sainsbury. I'm the editor-in-chief of digitallydownloaded.net. And with me this week, I'm outgunned by the New Zealand contingent. We have two. Ginny. Hello, Ginny.
Hey, Matt. How's it going?
All good. All good. And we have Matt, other Matt, New Zealand Matt. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Matt. How's it going? This is Matt. How are you, Matt?
I'm well done. Thanks, Matt. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm good.
Cool. So we've got a lot of stuff to talk about this week. We promise we're not going to talk about Far Cry 5, even though it's pretty cool and it's pissing a whole lot of people off. But we haven't got much else to say about that. We'll be talking about other stuff, more interesting stuff, and stuff that won't be disappointing when it actually gets around to being released. And welcome back. That was our typical Hatsune Miku intro. Hope you enjoyed it. It's a great song. Shut up, Alan. He's not here on the podcast, but I can just imagine he doesn't approve. Anyway, so we are going to start this podcast talking about the games of June, since by the time you listen to it, we are basically in June. And usually around June, there's a little bit of a lull in terms of game releases because, amongst other things, E3 happens and there's not much point releasing the game around then. All the attention's on the stuff that'll be coming out towards the end of the year instead. But this year, of course, because we can't get a break, there is an awful lot of very big games coming out this month. we just quickly run through them. We've got Tekken 7. We've got Cloudon Return, Stark Rose Valkyrie, Dirt 4 for racing game fans, Wipeout, Super Beat Zonic, which was a really good rhythm game on the PS Vita. It's coming out on PS4. We've got Final Fantasy 14 Stormblood, which I know that Ginny and Matt will, well, they'll basically disappear for a while once that one comes out. Then there's God Wars, which is a really good tactics game from Nipponichi. Get Even, which looks like one of the few first-person shooters that will be worth playing. Ever Oasis, which was a really good little 3DS game that was announced last year. It looks really good. Danganronpa, another episode, comes out on PS4. We've got RPG Maker. We've got Valkyria Revolution. We've got Crash Bandicoot and Tokyo Xanadu. So that's, you know, not including all the indie stuff and whatever else comes out that we just haven't got on our little list here. That's a big month of games. Very big month of games. So, Matt, what are you going to be playing from that list other than Final Fantasy 14?
Oh, well, you prevented me from talking about the one game I will be playing that I'll spend my whole month just playing. Although, no, that doesn't come out until the 20th, so I have to find some way to spend my time in those first couple of weeks. I will be playing Duck Rose Valkyrie, which looks really cool. And pretty much you convinced me on that with the litany of screenshots you've been sharing on Twitter over the last week or so that you've been playing it.
Yeah, I have been playing that. I've got an early review copy from the good people of ID Factory. And yeah, it's meant to be this more serious game in terms of the narrative and the tone from Compile Heart. But Compile Heart being Compile Heart, most of your characters spend most of the time running around in their underwear, which is just hilarious. It's a good game, though. it's a really good game.
Yeah, I'll be playing Super Beat Sonic because that was really good on Vita. Crash Bandicoot, I probably will be playing. I have my reservations about it, but it looks, I do really like the original games, and it looks like a pretty faithful remake of those. And Tokyo Xanadu as well, which I played a little bit of the Japanese version, and it seems it's cool. It's pretty cool. It's kind of Persona-ish in a way.
Because that's like exactly what we need, more
RPGs. Yeah, more. Yeah, we haven't had enough of those this year. and Ultra Danganronpa, another episode, Ultra Despair Girls on PS4. That will be. I really like the Vita version. I know it got, I think I liked it more than most other people. It got a lot of criticism for people who focus on how fun it is to press buttons.
Yeah, I mean,
because it's a third person shooter that's not as fluid or well made in terms of just controls and things, but I think it's the Danganronpa story is always good, and it's a very interesting addition to that. So I really enjoy that, and I'm really looking forward to playing it again.
Yeah, like I completely agree with you. Like, that was a really smart game, and I think a lot of people got kind of stuck on the somewhat, or yeah, fairly clumsy mechanics rather than the story it was trying to tell and the puzzles. Because it had some pretty good puzzles woven through
it. Yeah, and it did good stuff with the shooter mechanics by like integrating those into the puzzles. But I think people got clunky controls.
Yeah,
that's enough. I'm never playing this again.
Yeah, I just wonder how to.
Which is a shame.
I wonder how to look on the big screen, because the one thing I do feel from my time on the Vita was it was best suited to a Vita screen in terms of the actual, you know, the visual design of the game. I just wonder how it'll look all resed up. I hope it looks good, because it did look good on the Vita. It was just limited, I guess, in terms of detail. It was fairly flat.
So,
fingers crossed for it, because I think it'll be a good lead into Danganronpa 3 when that comes out a bit later on in the year.
Definitely. What about you, Ginny? What are you playing?
Ginny, what are you up to?
Well, my list will be similar but a little bit different from New Zealand Matt's. Surprised that you're not going to be playing Tekken, Matt. Really, but
oh, I probably will be playing that a little bit. I just forgot about it in the list.
I was like, all that waxing lyrical about the attractiveness of Shaheen and no one wants to play Tekken.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Oh,
we're waiting for the swimsuit DLC.
Just to clarify, when I talk about saying I'm playing Tekken, I will be spent all my time almost exclusively in the customization section playing dress ups, because that is what happens every time I play a Tekken game.
That is also how I spend like a good, every time I boot up like a Senran Kagura game, that's like my first 45 minutes, and I'm like, I need to get this outfit on point before I start playing the game. But yeah, I know what you mean. In terms of games, I will also be playing Dark Rose Valkyrie, also because I have been convinced by Australian Matt, because of all the well-angled and well-produced screenshots that he's been sharing on Twitter of this beautiful game.
Beautiful ladies.
Well, I mean, beautiful games often have beautiful ladies, so I feel like the two go hand in hand. I am also going to be playing a lot of Stormblood. I think I will bury myself in my room with Doritos packets and Mountain Dew and play hours and hours of Stormblood. But I will also am looking at playing God of War's Future Past because I love a tactics game. And you've got Ancient Japan, you've got tactics, you got me, like, in a nutshell, like, I am there. And also, I think one that wasn't on Matt's list, I don't know if either of you guys are into this series, by the way, but I'm going to be playing Valkyria Revolution. So have you guys played the series that it kind of spins off of, I guess?
Yeah, it's, I mean, like, I played
the Japanese military strategy games.
Yeah, I played Chronicles an awful lot. I think it's a real classic. And yep, I think it's an essential game that everybody that likes games should play. I guess what's put me off a little bit this month is that I've been reading some of the reports that have come out of Japan, and basically they've been saying that it's not up to the standards by any means of its predecessor, and people are a little bit disappointed by that. Now, I don't know how significantly it's a step down, but yeah, that has me a little bit concerned, and the lack of interest by the fan base as well for this game. I thought at first it might just be because there's so many games coming out this year, and everybody's kind of lost sight of the fact that this one's not that far away. But yeah, there seems to be something in it that it might just be a bit of a disappointment. I hope it's not, but it might be.
I think that is at least partially, and that should have been on my list, Ginny. I just kind of, it was such a busy month that I forgot about everything else. I think some of that feeling towards it is because it's basically a spin-off of Valkyria Chronicles, and so it's got a different, it's more of a traditional fantasy JRPG.
Yeah.
As opposed to that kind of tactics, World War One kind of.
I think
a lot of people were just kind of put off by that. I think it looks really cool, and I'm looking forward to playing it.
I think it'll be interesting. I mean, I know that some of the promotional material mentioned that it will have that the Fire Emblem mechanic whereby if your characters are dead, they're dead forever. Like, you're obviously not your main character, but your party members. So I think that will make it interesting, and hopefully because of that, they normally, I suppose, in Fire Emblem, because your companions are so fragile, you often have the ability to build quite deep relationships. I think that'd be a good, if they can integrate that social bond aspect into this game, I think it would be better than a usual JRPG. I think it can make up perhaps for some of the mechanical flaws that people think the game might have when it comes out. I don't know. I'm pretty hopeful though.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And I think the relationships between characters were certainly a strong point of the predecessor, Valkyria Chronicles. I think that the interaction between the characters and the story itself was much more interesting to me than the gameplay, as good as the gameplay actually ended up being. So yeah, as long as it's got a good story, I'll get along with it. Whether it's one of my favorites of the year or a game of the year contender or whatever is another matter, I guess. I just wanted to quickly bring things back to God Wars because for me, that's probably my most anticipated game of the year, of the month. And yeah, I mean, I actually got a chance to play it and speak to the CEO of Kadokawa Games, who also happened to be the lead of this game in production last year at Tokyo Game Show. And yeah, he was telling me about how this was a game that he has been studying, researching, and wanting to make for about 30 years. So he had this story, he had this idea for something he wanted to do. It took him about 30 years to get to the point where he realized that, hey, this could be a game, and this is how I'm going to make it. So yeah, it's going to be a really I think strong sense of Japanese history and culture coming through that one. Whether people kind of buy into it after the number of tactics games that have come out recently is another matter. I hope they do because it really does look gorgeous as well. If you haven't seen screenshots yet, podcast listeners, go and have a look at some of the shots of God Wars because I think you'll be pretty blown away by how they've worked with traditional Japanese art styles to make this really unique looking tactics RPG. So that's my pick for the month. I just hope that it turns out as good as my little demo that I had with it last year left me with the impression it was going to be a really good game. So. Welcome back. So, for the next section of our little podcast this week, we are going to talk about reboots because there are a lot of them, and this is a topic that Ginny in particular wanted to talk about. So, take it away, Ginny. you know, what do you think is interesting about game reboots? What's a game reboot in the first place? And, you know, what are your thoughts about it?
Okay, well, I think I'm going to start with, I suppose, what I think a game reboot is, because I know that, I suppose, across the board, I think it's still kind of uncertain, like we don't have one sort of concerted stance in general in the industry about what a game reboot is. I mean, for example, you see lists that will, you know, that will consider Final Fantasy games that aren't in the JRPG format as reboots. But then if you think about it, I don't think either of us here would consider a Final Fantasy game like Chocobo Racing a reboot, you know? So, I mean, I suppose to me, a reboot is a game that has the core components, whether it's narrative or characters from a main franchise, and has those core components reimagined in a new style of game. I don't mean styles in a new genre of the game. So, like, for example, a game going from a tactics game to an RPG, would it really be a reboot? It might be more of a spin-off, but not a reboot. I would say a reboot would be something that consistently takes the core ideas and gives them an entirely new skin, an entirely new interpretation. So I suppose, for example, for me, the Tomb Raider games were a reboot, if that makes sense. So you took the core component, which is Lara Croft and her amazing physical prowess and skills and attractiveness, and you turn that into, like, I suppose, a deeper introspective look at the character while it's still maintaining the parts of Tomb Raider that the core franchise was known for, like the puzzles, like the climbing, the awful jumping sound effects, which somehow still exist, even in this 21st century. But yeah, I would say Tomb Raider is my example, I think, of a successful reboot in that it captures exactly the elements from the main franchise that everyone can recognize pretty much instantly and updates them in a form that is very, very much different from the old sort of platformy style puzzle focused games. So maintaining the good stuff that we all know and love that we grew up with, but giving it a modern updated twist. Like, you wouldn't look at the two games side by side and go, this is a continuation of the Tomb Raider franchise. Everything feels organically different.
Yeah, I think the other thing that is important with reboots is that they're not the reboot is kind of a statement in terms of the future of the series as well. So, you know, Tomb Raider is a good example. The new Tomb Raider came out and it was obvious that this is how Crystal Dynamics is going to make Tomb Raider games going forwards as well. So, I mean, to give you an example of what would not be a reboot, if you look at Final Fantasy VII and its remake, that's, you know, coming up in the next couple of years, according to Square Enix, I've seen some people say, you know, this is a reboot of Final Fantasy VII. It's not really a reboot because Final Fantasy 16 or whatever comes next. Yeah, we're up to 16. Final Fantasy 16 will probably be a different game again. So it's not really a reboot of the Final Fantasy series. It's a remake of one game within that series. And yeah, I think that's important because a reboot should be an example. It should take an older game or a classic game and then modernize it in a way that future games will be able to use that that new game as a template as well. So Matt, over to you. What do you think are some good examples of good reboots versus, you know, reboots that kind of miss the mark?
Well, I think the best example still is what Jenny already talked about with Tomb Raider. And I think another very good example is Wolfenstein, The New Order. Which came out a few years ago. And basically, it's that same kind of thing. It's got the same basic ideas as the original thing, but with a fresh taking a fresh look at those things, and as you said, projecting a new direction forward for the series. Yeah, I think that was those are the two that really stick out in my head as great examples. Not good examples, maybe Thief, that came out a couple of years ago.
It was
okay, I guess, as a game, but I think people rightfully expected a lot more from that, and just because from how good the original Thief games were, people wanted the reboot to be a modernization of that same kind of quality, and it just wasn't really. And so, yeah,
I think that game really stood out to me for being very uniquely mediocre.
Yeah,
it was playable, wasn't it? You could get through it, and you wouldn't mind the time that you spent playing through it. Like, it wasn't, you weren't sitting there going, why am I doing this? I want a quick gaming. You're playing it, and you were, you know, enjoying it enough for what it was. But yeah, Thief, the earlier Thief games were, you know, genuine classic games, and this one just couldn't live up to that legacy, which is always, I guess, the challenge with reboots. You know, if you're going to reboot something and modernize it, you can't then go and, you know, shove the fans, you know, faces in it. From the earlier games, you have to be mindful of the heritage and the tradition that gave that game, the franchise, the power that it has. You know, I wanted to mention also, you know, Fire Emblem, the recent Fire Emblem, the last one. That's a good example of what I hope is a reboot, in the sense that, you know, like I was saying, I'm hoping that the future Fire Emblems take, you know, what they've put into this last one with the dungeon crawling elements and the more open kind of exploration of the game world, and that becomes a standard for Fire Emblem going forwards. Because if so, that makes this recent one a proper reboot, and certainly a really good quality one that I think people will like going forwards. I want to say an example of a bad reboot, which is still a good game, for me, is Mortal Kombat. The last, which one was Mortal Kombat? Oh, it was just called Mortal Kombat 9, wasn't it? Yeah, Mortal Kombat 9, which was titled Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
For me, I feel like with Mortal Kombat and then Mortal Kombat 10, which was the last one, the developers have deviated away from what made the Mortal Kombat games what they were. Not so much Mortal Kombat 1, which is a pretty terrible game, but Mortal Kombat 2 and 3 were, it's hard to really explain, but this new Mortal Kombat feels off in terms of the way it plays, the mechanics of it. And yeah, the new direction that the series has taken doesn't sit particularly well with me, aside from the inclusion of Freddy Krueger in Mortal Kombat 9, which was awesome.
I don't think I've ever actually played Mortal Kombat, the most recent one anyway, so I have no conception of whether or not it's going to be a good one.
It's a really good game. That's the thing. It's a really, really good game. They're good fighting games. I'm certainly not disparaging that. I just don't think they're true enough to Mortal Kombat. They feel more like, you know, Injustice, which is also done by the same development team. They feel more like that than an actual Mortal Kombat.
Oh, right, yeah. And I'm not a huge Injustice fan either, so... Ooh.
I think something else that I think of in terms of reboots, and this might also come sort of more from other media, and like particularly comic books, is that reboots, in my mind, they take a story that's been serialized over probably 2, 3, 4, 5 games and restart it from scratch again. And so it's hard for me to think of something like a Final Fantasy game where every new entry is its own story, with a few exceptions like 10-2 and 13-2. Every new game is its own story. So it's hard for me to think of yet another game, even if it's doing things differently or promoting a new direction for the series. I still wouldn't really think of that as a reboot.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if they were going to... Final Fantasy is such an odd one because aside from the title, like you say, the games are so completely different. Where I could imagine some kind of... You could talk about them in context of being a reboot would be something like Final Fantasy 15 a couple of years down the track, because it's quite obvious that they're going to keep releasing games in the Final Fantasy 15 world. They've already got, what, two mobile games. There's like a beat-em-up, side-scrolling beat-em-up on PS4. There's the actual Final Fantasy 15 itself. There's that pinball mini-game, which is on iOS as well. You can almost be certain there'll be a Final Fantasy 15 2, if not 3, 4 down the track as well, because, you know, Square Enix invested so much money in this world, they need to make something back out of it. You know, after 10 years or so, after there's a whole mass of games set around this one Final Fantasy, if they were to then say, hey, we're going to remake Final Fantasy 15, that would be like a reboot for the Final Fantasy 15 series as such. And for me, you need to treat each Final Fantasy game as a separate franchise, because they really are. Final Fantasy 12 is an interesting one in the sense that there is quite a few games that are set in that world. Already Final Fantasy Tactics is set in the same world. Final Fantasy Reverent Wings on the DS was set in the same world. So Final Fantasy 12, in a sense, could be seen as a reboot if they then go and do more games set in that world again, which when I was speaking to the developers is certainly a possibility if this game sells well when it comes out next month. And welcome back. So for the last section of the podcast this week, we wanted to talk about classic board games, pen and paper games, strategy games, that we love to play on tabletops, and when they're adapted into video games, the challenges and tribulations that they go through, that often mean that we end up in games that we're not very happy about. The two examples that are the most obvious ones are Warhammer and Dungeons and Dragons. So Warhammer is a tabletop war game, strategy game, and it is really very popular with the people that like to, you know, buy the miniatures, paint them up, and then put them, you know, in fantasy battle scenarios. The adaptions of those, of that base game into video games, has been, you know, hot and cold over a couple of decades now. There's been some really good ones and then some really terrible ones. And yeah, so I mean, I know you're a fan of the Warhammer franchise, Ginny. What are your thoughts about how it's been handled, you know, now in particular, but also in the past? Any particular games that you want to highlight as real classics?
I suppose in terms of Warhammer, I enjoy both the Warhammer fantasy games and also, you know, the Warhammer 40K games, which are like the sci-fi version of the fantasy game, essentially, right down to the races just being space versions of, you know, the base fantasy races. But I would say currently a game that I suppose I recently picked up and put down is the most recent Warhammer 40K Dawn of War 3. And I have to say, in terms of modern treatment of tabletop games, I think the most recent offerings that we've gotten actually have not captured the spirit of the tabletop game as much as they would like. This might also be my own opinion as someone who does play tabletop games and enjoys that really sort of organic feel of having your figurines sitting around a table with a bunch of other people that also have no life and playing out a campaign in a fantasy universe. But the one thing that really stuck out to me in terms of Dawn of War 2 and 3 in particular, and I guess the Warhammer 40K Dawn of War series, is that I think they have been a bit disadvantaged in terms of trying to capture the same atmosphere that you get from actually playing the tabletop game. So, for example, Dawn of War 3, while it's got incredible graphics compared to the other games, incredibly comprehensive narrative treatment comparatively to the other games, I would say that all those things that we know and come to expect from modern games, things like aspects that have a lot of micromanagement and customization, don't really play the same way that they would in a tabletop game. So there's lots of sort of like small on-the-fly micromanagement strategies because Dawn of War 3 is basically an RTS. And because of that, you detract from the overall atmosphere of playing an actual 40K game, which I would say is a lot more about initial preparation. Everything kind of feels a bit more onerous, like it's building up to something incredibly, like the slow march of war is the atmosphere that I would get from a regular 40K game. And then trying to transition that into an RTS, while I understand that's the only way to feasibly have and control that quantity of troops that you would find on a Warhammer 40K tabletop game, I think the way that RTSs play, the things that you have to manage, the way that they incorporate things like base building, I think all of those elements, while they make sense and they're coherent thematically, I think that they entirely change the atmosphere from playing on a tabletop. So, like I said, a lot of people enjoy modernization of their games, which I completely understand. But I think if you're playing the Warhammer 40K games because you love the tabletop games, I think there'll be something lacking there for you. Like, the concept doesn't translate over impeccably.
Yeah, I mean, Warhammer's an interesting one because where the license previously sat exclusively with THQ, before THQ went bust, not the new THQ, which is Nordic Games, but the last one. Now that the license is open and Games Workshop, who is the manufacturer of the Warhammer tabletop game, has actually, you know, allowed the license to go out to basically anybody that wants to develop a Warhammer game. There are some examples of the 40K, Warhammer 40K, that you might be interested in, Jenny. There's one called 40K Armageddon, I believe, which is by, it's produced by Slytherin, which is a war games specialist. It's a turn-based tactics Warhammer 40K game. It doesn't look great because none of their games ever do, but the core strategy of the game is probably more in line of with what you're looking for. And, you know, for me, I'm more of a fan of the fantasy Warhammer. And, yeah, it's been a similar situation where THQ managed the property pretty poorly. I think the only THQ attempt at doing a fantasy Warhammer game was that MMO, which crashed and burned pretty quickly. Since then, the license has gone out and Creative Assembly has picked it up to create Total War Warhammer, which is pretty good. It's a real-time strategy game, so it does change some basic things about how the game plays compared to the tabletop game, obviously. But as somebody who played the early classic Warhammer games, such as Shadow of the Horned Rat and Dark Omen, way back on Windows 95 PCs and stuff, that was a pretty good return to form for the franchise. And hopefully they continue building on that, which is which would be pretty cool. The one I wanted to talk about a little bit was Dungeons and Dragons, because I've been playing D&D since I was able to read, basically. And so I was maybe 8 or 9 when I first picked up a D&D book and read through it. Didn't really understand it a whole lot back then, but, you know, I was really gripped by the artwork and fantasy concept and stuff. And I just kept reading the books and getting the books and started to play when I was a little bit older. But, yeah, been a fan of the franchise for a very long time. And with that, obviously, comes a lot of the video games. D&D video games originally were produced by a company called SSI, who did Eye of the Beholder and Wake of the Ravager and quite a few old DOS-based D&D games, and those were good. Then what is now, it was BioWare back then? I think it was still BioWare. Anyway, the guys that eventually were BioWare, if they weren't called that back then did Baldur's Gate, and obviously that's one of the most well-renowned RPGs that's ever been created. And Icewind Dale was produced by another company using the same engine. It was very good. And then what happened was Atari picked up the license, and that was basically the end of good Dungeons & Dragons games. Atari's was produced some crazy stuff, like a game called Dragon Shard, which was this really odd real-time strategy game that had very little to do with Dungeons & Dragons. Atari did the MMO, Neverwinter, which is okay, but again, doesn't really feel like a Dungeons & Dragons game. There was a Dungeons & Dragons Tactics game that was released on PSP, which was pretty dismal. Frankly, I'm not surprised that Atari went bankrupt if Dungeons & Dragons was one of its major franchises. I don't know where the D&D license actually sits now. I think it's in a bit of a limbo, and that's unfortunate because, you know, you're talking about the best-selling, most well-renowned RPG that's ever been created. Everybody knows the name Dungeons & Dragons. For it to have no great, really great video game for the longest time now is really disappointing. And yeah, so that's my little rant done. Matt, are there any games that you've played, you know, outside of the world of video games, and then, you know, wanted to play a video game version of it or play the video game version of it and was disappointed?
Probably Magic the Gathering. I played that. I was never like a hardcore kind of player, but I played that quite a bit as a kid. And there have been a few attempts at creating video game versions of that with various degrees of success. But I think, yeah, none of them have really captured the feel of playing the card game.
It's really weird, isn't it, Magic the Gathering? Like, here we've got so many of those digital card games that have done so well on in digital forms. Like Hearthstone is the obvious example, but you know, now there's Gwent, which has just come out. There's, you know, I don't want to say the B word because we're not meant to be talking about them, but you know, there's an Elder Scrolls collectible card game. There's Might and Magic one, which was, you know, quite strong a few years ago. And then it's really weird that, you know, all these games and then Magic the Gathering just couldn't capitalize on it themselves and do something despite being the card game that everybody plays, the physical card game that basically everybody plays.
Yeah,
the original collectible card game, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite odd as well because I also am a Magic the Gathering player. And I've realized that the cards, buying the physical cards, is a very unsustainable addiction. Yeah. A bit like smoking in New Zealand and Australia. So, I mean, I for the longest time was trying to find substitutes. So, obviously, there's the Magic the Gathering game on Steam. But that is, I would say, expensive and awful. And for me, weirdly enough, the only way to actually feel like I'm getting my Magic the Gathering fix is not to actually play a game online, but to actually play on this like emulator, which basically makes it feel as if you're playing Magic the Gathering like physically, like having all the cards input, having, you know, to turn your cards. So basically, I'm not even, I think it's hard to capture Magic the Gathering in the in digital format as a game, mainly because of how complex it is. Like, I'm not calling Hearthstone reductive or easy, because I play a lot of Hearthstone. I love Blizzard, despite knowing that Blizzard is evil and awful. But it's just, I think, because Magic the Gathering has so many other elements to just playing out your turn, I can see how it's harder to have that sort of play out in a way that makes current card games and electronics so popular, because it's all about having quick matches. You know, you want to play Hearthstone on the go, on your mobile. You want it over in like 5-15 minutes. But Magic the Gathering games can go on for hours, you know? So I think that because of the length and the format of the game and the way that you can have all these multiple layered turns, like 7 actions in one turn, essentially, I think that makes it not as friendly to what I would consider a more portable format, which is electronic.
But yeah, I'm playing a digital game which is basically a card game mixed with a tactics game called Pox Nora. It's just come out on PS4, and it's like Magic the Gathering in that it's a very complex game. And, you know, if you get a match going, it, you know, it can last like 2 hours easily, which is not something that a lot of people have time for. And when Wizards of the Coast has tried to take Magic the Gathering and turn it into a digital thing, they have tried to make it a faster experience. Like most of the Magic the Gathering, I haven't played one for a while, but previously the Magic the Gathering games all gave you kind of set decks, and there was maybe 10 different decks to choose from, and there was very limited ability to change cards in and out, which is obviously a big part of the Magic the Gathering experience, that you create your own decks, but they kind of streamlined it into these limited kind of deck options to make for a faster paced kind of game. And it just didn't really work. They were, you know, reasonably fun for a short while, but nothing that really lasted. And I think you're right. I think Wizards of the Coast has a challenge in trying to take the Magic the Gathering game and take it digital. Especially now that, you know, Hearthstone and such is such a popular esport with so much money into it. It'll be hard to get digital players away from it back to Magic the Gathering. So yeah, I don't know. I don't have answers. I'm not a game developer or publisher, but it's a pity because Magic the Gathering is certainly the first one.
Yeah, I agree.
The first collectible card game, and there's always a bit of a nostalgic soft spot for it as a result. It would have been nice to see them do digital better.
Hopefully Square Enix can find a good way to do a digital version of the Final Fantasy card game.
Yes, because I'm writing to that, the physical version of that game at the moment, and it's proving to be very popular. Like we were saying between segments, it's selling out basically as soon as they can get cards into stores. And there's quite a lot of leagues going, games going. And it's a good system. It's really good, clean card game that's not too complex as yet. Because Magic the Gathering's been around for so long, there's so much stuff that's come into it, it's become very complex, like you say. Final Fantasy's only two seasons in, so it's still a fairly new game, and it's still fairly streamlined in terms of how it plays. So there's a chance there for Square Enix to do something pretty cool.